Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and His kingdom. I'm thrilled to have with us a man who has been actively warning for, well, many years now, about various dangers facing our country against which we must be both steeled and active, namely, most immediately, what is happening on our southern border. And his name is Michael Yon. He has been covering that beat intensively now for quite some time, notably from the Darien Gap, a particularly strategic part of the path that gets from Central America up into Mexico and, of course, into our own country for, well, now millions of illegal aliens. And we wanted to catch up with Michael, a distinguished war correspondent, former special forces operator, veteran, author of now six books, and, of course, a very important contributor to programs like this. And we're delighted to have him with us. Michael, welcome.
Thanks, Frank. I love coming on your show. And this is a very important time. As you know, I spent most of last year on border issues. Right after inauguration, I flew straight to El Paso and immediately watched the flood come in. That started within 24 hours. There's always been a trickle, but as soon as the president's changed, it was a run for the border. And so from there, it was down to Panama and Colombia. I was in the country of Colombia for a while, down at the Darien Gap, because that's the other side of the Darien Gap. The Darien Gap, of course, is that about 60 to 65 miles of just wild, crazy jungle through between Panama and Darien, or I'm sorry, between on the Darien Isthmus, between Panama and Colombia, in which there's no roads. And so many of the migrants come into South America. They'll go to Brazil or Ecuador, and other places. They'll start first. They'll come up through Colombia, and that's where they enter the Darien Gap. And probably 10% die. Nobody knows how many die. It's some huge number. I spent 4 months down there last year. So I was on the Colombia side, then flew up to the Panama side and was down there with the Imbara Indians quite a lot. Took two congressmen down with Chuck Holton. Congressman Tom Tiffany from Wisconsin and Burgess Owens from Utah. We took them out into the jungle. No security. They're very courageous to do that. So we took them out with the Indians and saw this huge flood of migrants coming in. Last year, it's estimated that 100,000 people came through. Foreign migrants came through the Darien Gap heading north, right? And again, probably 10% of those die. So that's 10,000. Almost nobody knows about that. I've never seen so many vultures in my life, literally vultures and or buzzards. And it's amazing. It's just like a war down there. And so then they head north out of Panama and a program.
All right. Well, I want to pick up on that point, Michael. Let me just interject here. A war is really what we're now increasingly concerned about, I think, on the southern side of the border. And to the extent that this problem has been, as you say, greatly aggravated by the policies of the Biden administration, that war is now, it seems to me, squarely on Joe Biden and his team. Let's talk a little bit further about the numbers of people that are involved. I had Todd Bensman, who I know you've worked with in the past from the Center for Immigration Studies, on the program this week, and he was talking about the latest numbers being perhaps as high as 3 million people having made this trek into the United States illegally across our southern border, when you count in not just the 2.4 million that we know made that trip, but another 500,000 or so perhaps that were getaways or, you know, guys who were not actually contacted by the border police, border security folks. So let me ask you about this Border Patrol. When you look at those numbers, Michael, and the prospect that this so-called Title 42 basis for sending large numbers of them back is about to be waived by the Biden team, we're talking about not just a war, but a full-on invasion of our country getting even more severe, are we not?
That's right. I mean, and it's a huge. And those numbers are right. When I said 100,000, that's just the Darien Gap. That's just one door. And then, as you know, huge numbers gather after that point. And so, and we're also looking at something else that can exacerbate this incredibly, and that's food supply. We're looking at global famines at this point unfolding later this year, which I've been warning about at least 2,000 times since January of 2020. So for more than 2 years, I've been warning about this. As you know, I stay on Global Recon. I'm, you know, constantly out there on the ground somewhere, and either across the United States or last year, tracking these things in Morocco and Greece and Lithuania, warning about the Russia thing. About probably 8 months ago in Lithuania, I was on the ground there warning about what's happening. Of course, we were concerned they were going to hit Lithuania, not Ukraine. They hit Ukraine. But it's clear the Russians were up to something up along with Belarus. And so once you go out there on the ground, you can see these things. We're going to get hit a lot harder when these food supply issues begin to come home, which they're starting right now in places like Egypt and Nigeria. Of course, Lebanon, because of their clever storing fertilizer downtown, which exploded and destroyed a lot of their food supplies. Not to mention Syria food problems, because so this goes on and on, not to detail all the food problems. Bottom line, there's going to be some huge food problems. They're in the hopper, and food problems cause mass migrations. So in addition to, you know, our border under Trump was almost locked down.
One other piece of this is that, and you mentioned that you've been spending a considerable amount of time in Colombia. We're looking at the prospect, I fear, of Colombia and subsequently Brazil also undergoing through elections a fundamental transformation that might compound this problem even further. Talk a little bit about the Marxists' takeover of Latin America and the fact that large numbers of people are forced to leave their homes. We've seen it with the Venezuelans. I fear it's coming with Peruvians and Chileans, but probably Brazilians and Colombians in the not too distant future. How would that impact what you're talking about?
Oh, here? Certainly Colombia. I was down there last year with a senator named Maria Cabal. She's a Colombian senator, and she was warning about this and sent me many messages about it. I saw it. I mean, I was in Colombia with Chuck Holton last year, and saw, you know, the instability caused in part internal. Interesting, let me say this, Frank. Maria, we were having lunch together, and she said, they're trying to make everybody speak their own indigenous languages again. They're trying to make everybody split into little parts and fight each other and fight us. And she said, why are they doing that? I said, Maria, this is an operational strategy. They do this in Thailand, where I have an office. They're trying to split Thailand into three parts. I was out with the Maoist in Nepal for about a year. They did the same in Nepal, trying to get everybody to speak their languages. We know this. We've seen it in the United States. It happens all over. It's an amazing strategy. That's just part of it. But Colombia, of course, if Colombia...
Divide and conquer, Michael Yon. It's a term you're very familiar with, I know. Michael, we have to take a short break. We're going to come right back with more on basically how this problem is metastasizing. And I'm so glad you brought up this issue of what the left, including outfits like those that are trying to take over in Colombia and Brazil, are up to. That and more is straight ahead with Michael Yon right after this.
visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 39 years ago today, my old boss, President Ronald Reagan, launched the Strategic Defense Initiative. It was intended to enable the United States to protect its people from nuclear-armed missiles, not avenge their mass murder after the fact. Tragically, unbeknownst to most Americans, we still have no comprehensive defense against the vast and recently upgraded missile arsenals of enemies like Russia's Vladimir Putin and China's Xi Jinping. Worse yet, the American people are largely ignorant of another ominous fact. We are relying on an obsolescent nuclear arsenal, almost entirely put into place by Mr. Reagan and his predecessors, even to avenge an attack on them. In light of Putin's Ukraine-driven nuclear threats, we'll be holding an urgent webinar today on preventing nuclear war. This is no drill. Please join us at presentdangerchina.org to learn how we do that. This is Frank Gaffney.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we're continuing a conversation with Michael Yon, a really courageous and formidable war correspondent, a man who knows whereof he speaks because he goes into harm's way to find out what the facts are and report it to the rest of us. And we're so appreciative of his visits with us from time to time. Michael, we were talking about what you've been witnessing and warning about for some time, the growing invasion of our country and what might contribute to it becoming even worse in the next few, well, weeks and months, I suppose. One piece of what's happening is that this surge of people, all of whom, as Todd Benzman told us, have to pay very substantial amounts of money to cartels to transit that last stretch of Mexico into the United States, have enormously enriched these cartels with their human smuggling, their drug smuggling, and heavens knows what else, perhaps weapons of mass destruction and terrorist smuggling as well. Today, the government of Mexico, seemingly somewhat reluctantly, because I'm not sure that Manuel López Obrador particularly wants to confront the cartels, but the Mexican army nonetheless is finding itself in unbelievably intense firefights, including on our border, Nuevo Laredo, most recently, I think, with these heavily armed cartels. What's the security situation like there as you see it, and where's this likely to go?
It's intense, obviously. And, you know, the cartels are immensely powerful. And they're not consigned just to Mexico. They're buying farms in Oregon, for instance. I flew out to Oregon last year to visit with a marijuana farmer, a legal marijuana farmer, who told me that the cartels are buying property around him. And they are. They're buying cartels from Mexico. Why would they bring it in tunnels when they can just grow it in Oregon, right? And so, I mean, insofar as marijuana goes, right? This doesn't, I don't know about the fentanyl and those other things, but they're physically now growing marijuana in Oregon, the actual cartels. So, I mean, these sorts of things are just, we are like Siamese twins, and it's becoming worse and deeper. And the fecklessness, it's not even weakness of the Biden administration. They're clearly part of the problem. I called up Jack Maxey last night, whom you know, he's got the laptop. I saw other things last night. This is clear that the Biden administration is amazingly corrupt beyond their traitors. I'm going to use the word. It's incredibly clear. I mean, how much evidence do we need to see? Hunter Biden took $1.5 billion with a B dollars from China. I mean, he's a bag man for his father. So, I mean, these sorts of things, the cartels are already well within the United U.S. borders, and it's just growing. Meanwhile, the border is being like, go ahead, Frank.
I want to come back. We're going to talk, I hope, with Jack Maxey in the next couple of days about his findings on Hunter Biden's laptop. But Michael, just staying with the cartel security problem, at some point, do you think it's likely, and I also want to talk more about this trader business, but do you think it's likely that the United States military will have to be, once again, like going after Pancho Villa, sent into Mexico to clear out this cartel warfare and increasing capabilities to attack not just the government of Mexico and its forces, but our own personnel on our side of the border as well?
Well, it's amazingly possible, again, but again, the cartels are, these are sophisticated organizations, not the street level thugs, but the higher levels. I mean, their kids go to, you know, Yale, you know, I mean, they're all over the United States. So it's not like we can just go take them out of Mexico. They're buying foreign farms in Oregon. They live down on the border in Texas. I mean, they are big property owners in the United States. So it's not as if, you know, they're over there in some distant land. It's not that at all. And so, yeah, we're faced with a very serious problem of our own design, or at least the designs of the people that are clearly trying to rip apart the United States.
Yeah. Well, and this, it goes back to that divide to conquer strategy, doesn't it? I've called it a wrecking operation, what the Biden-Harris administration is doing really across the board, both domestically and internationally. Michael, just a thought. One of the principal beneficiaries of the wrecking operation, I've concluded, is the Chinese Communist Party. And you've pointed out that, you know, an immense amount of money has migrated from the Chinese as part of their elite capture operation, as Peter Schweitzer has pointed out, has gone into the Biden family, including to Joe Biden himself. Traitor is a strong word. I think it's apt in this case. If what has been happening is Joe Biden is doing this wrecking at the direction of the Chinese Communist Party, would you say that's a distinct possibility, if not a provable fact at this point?
Yeah, traitor is a very severe word. It's also appropriate in this instance. I mean, words like traitor, these are words that I don't use lightly. And it's very clear that Joe Biden runs the Biden crime family. It's just, how obvious does it have to be? I mean, it's there. You know, I've seen much of the laptop. We've seen his actions. We've seen Joe Biden's actions. He is there, the big T traitor. And it's destroying the United States. He's not the only one, of course. I don't know who all the players are, but clearly this is not all down to just ineptitude. This is not all just theft. This is an actual plan that people have talked about for generations to destroy the United States. The Russians have talked about it for generations. The Chinese have talked. Americans have talked about it for generations. And it's coming to pass. And the only people standing between that end is us, the American patriots. We're the only ones that can stop it. There's no 911 to call. We're it.
You know, that's exactly right. Speaking of American patriots, you embedded recently with a whole bunch of them in semi-truck trailer operations, convoys across this country. Talk quickly about that experience, if you would, Michael. We've only got about 2 minutes left, but I do want our audience to get a sense of who those folks were and what has been accomplished by their efforts to date, and what's the next step as you see it?
Yeah, I flew out to California. It was at a place called Adelanto near Barstow, and drove all the way across the United States with them to Washington, D.C. They're still there in Hagerstown, Maryland at the Speedway. You can go see them. Long drive, an amazing number of Americans came out waving flags. We must have gone under 1,000 bridges with people. Sometimes it was just one guy waving a flag like a crazy man on the island. Those were some of the best. Other times it was like 500 people or 1,000 people on the bridge, thousands and thousands of people on the side of the road, mile after mile, fire trucks with flags and police shining their lights in support, waving at us. I mean, there was a huge number of people. I had to get an airplane at one point to get above just to try to see how big it was.
What's the next step, Michael, as you understand it?
With the truckers, they're still there. They're still protesting. There's a live stream. You can look up People's Convoy live on, say, YouTube if you dare to go there, and you'll see live streams from, you know, the Speedway, and also as they drive, still going around Washington. I mean, they have accomplished a lot. They wanted to. There's a lot of Canadian flags flying, by the way, and I asked many people why Canadian flags, and they're actually Americans. They're just saying to show thanks to the Canadians for the idea, right?
Michael, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you for this report, and come back to us with updates. So wherever you are, there's trouble, that's for sure, and we need your insights into what's going on and what we need to be doing about it. God bless you, my friend. It's good to talk with you. Next up, we'll speak with a foreign-born American patriot by the name of Dr. Shayo Ajiboye about his experiences here in America and in Nigeria. That and more, straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 39 years ago today, my old boss, President Ronald Reagan, launched the Strategic Defense Initiative. It was intended to enable the United States to protect its people from nuclear-armed missiles, not avenge their mass murder after the fact. Tragically, unbeknownst to most Americans, we still have no comprehensive defense against the vast and recently upgraded missile arsenals of enemies like Russia's Vladimir Putin and China's Xi Jinping. Worse yet, the American people are largely ignorant of another ominous fact. We are relying on an obsolescent nuclear arsenal, almost entirely put into place by Mr. Reagan and his predecessors, even to avenge an attack on them. In light of Putin's Ukraine-driven nuclear threats, we'll be holding an urgent webinar today on preventing nuclear war. This is no drill. Please join us at presentdangerchina.org to learn how we do that. This is Frank Gaffney.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, and I want to extend a very special welcome to our next guest. His name is Dr. Shayo Ajiboye. He is what I call a foreign-born American patriot. And as part of our series of profiles of such people, I'm very pleased to have him with us. His day job is as the president of Mission Africa International, a very important effort based here in the United States to help people, notably in his native land, Nigeria. But before we get to Nigeria, what's happening there, and why it should matter to the rest of us, I did want to just ask Dr. Shayo to talk a little bit about his experiences in coming to the United States and in developing the passionate love I know he feels for this country, its freedoms, as well as his concerns about the perishability of those freedoms. Dr. Shayo, welcome back to Securing America. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you very much. I feel greatly honored. I appreciate you.
The honor is ours. Let me ask you about that experience that brought you to this country in the first place and has helped you become such a passionate champion of America, and why you are concerned about the future of our country.
Oh, I came to this country as a graduate student. From being a graduate student, we had children. My country from where I came was a reasonable place, if I can use that language, to live. And I never, for the life of me, thought of emigrating. But right before my eyes, I saw the breakdown of freedom. You know, the things we took for granted, the lives that was bequeathed to us as a people, the joys that we had to move freely, to associate freely, to go and come. I saw all of that break down gradually under Islamic jihadism. First of all, true.
You're talking about Nigeria now.
Nigeria.
Your experiences there.
First of all, in covert action, and then in overt action. And while I witnessed that, I also was witnessing the amazing story called the United States of America. From sea to shining sea, I was privileged to actually drive right across this country as a graduate student from St. Louis, Washington University in St. Louis, to New Jersey, and from St. Louis to Seattle, and from St. Louis to Los Angeles. Amazing place. Impossible to describe if you're coming from another clime. The resilience of the builder, the vision of the people that made this country, the freedom to move without, when people raise specters that divide us, that wasn't my experience of America. My experience of America was this amazing acceptance, amazing opportunity, and it made me to honor this place deeply and to want to defend what it represents and to stand against anything that will cause it to become like what it should not be.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I've been so touched by both your friendship as well as your leadership, and why I wanted to share it with our audience. I thank you for those expressions of deep commitment to this country and your call to all of us, I think, to protect it as you have sworn to do yourself. Let me turn now to Nigeria, though. You talked about jihad taking place in your native land. The consequences of that jihad are now unmistakable. And yet, we've been told both by the government there and by our own government under, I'm sorry to say, both the Trump and Biden administrations, that it's not jihad. There's just this struggle between different communities, farmers on the one hand, typically Christian, and herdsmen, Fulani, typically tribesmen, generally Muslim, on the other. Level set with us, if you would, Dr. Shayo Ajiboye, about what is actually happening in Nigeria now, what's been happening for some time, but how severe the problem has become just in the past year or two.
Well, pretext, you know, and narratives, something we are now used to hearing in the American context. The Nigerian government and the leadership are committed to a narrative that does not represent what is on the ground. And they sell this narrative to the world. And because they have all the paraphernalia of government, they have hijacked essentially judiciary, economy, politics. They have hijacked the treasury, the resources of a nation. They have everything with which to pursue this narrative. Unfortunately, the good American people that the people looked up to, the people really looked up to United States of America as an arbiter for good. All of a sudden, it began facing its own challenge, and defining truth becomes really problematic. And this issue of jihadism just went from bad to worse. Call it what it is. It is jihadism. Even this last week, there was still attempt to take over land, and people were killed. 100 houses burnt in one village right beside the village where I work. So I'm not talking about somewhere far, far, far. I'm talking about something that is very, very close to me and to my team.
When you have experienced these problems, or your colleagues, your students that you have been nurturing have been subjected to these sorts of attacks, both, you know, raids of various kinds and trying to drive people off the land, and in some cases, kidnapping, in others, outright murder. What has the government of Nigeria been doing to protect these people?
Nothing. I have been involved with this.
How could that be?
I have been involved in this now for multiple years. I do not know of one arrest. Villages have been sacked. Homes have been destroyed. I'm not talking about one or two or three. I'm talking of whole communities wiped off because people who are trying to impose an emirate, a jihadist proposition. Whole state have been left uninhabitable because the people are implementing a zero option. In 2022, they're trying to clear the place so that they can repopulate it.
It's religious cleansing, I guess one might say, isn't it? And the government is reportedly there in Nigeria actively helping, in some cases, the Fulanis, perhaps because Fulanis populate the government at the highest levels. Is that contributing to this, would you say?
That is what we believe, that Fulanis are critical in the government of Nigeria. Every critical position in Nigeria is held by a Fulani. In a country of over 300 million people, a people group that is less than 10 million people, less than 10 million, or maybe between 10 and 15 million, have captured the power and held all the other ethnic nationalities hostage. And the attempt, either from the left or from their right, is to build an Islamic emirate on the land of Nigeria.
Yeah. And in the course of it, to drive the Christians from that land and perhaps force them out of the country altogether or into terrible privation in the southern parts of the country that have not yet been as afflicted as the northern and middle belt parts. But the trouble is, as you know better than anybody, Dr. Shayo, in the absence of there being any penalties for this behavior, to say nothing of it being effectively rewarded by the government on the one hand, and you know, by the taking of property and the taking of the land and so on, by those perpetrating this jihad, it is going to get worse. And this is a microcosm of what's happening, as you know so well, sir, to Christians around the world. And we're focused on this as an issue, and we will be coming back to you for more about what's happening in Nigeria and what we can do to help. In the meantime, thank you for your time today, Dr. Shayo Ajibwe. God bless you. Keep up your great work at missionafricainternational.org. Next up, we're going to speak with Ed Dow right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, and it's a pleasure to say we are joined by a man that I have heard a lot about, but have not had a chance to meet until now, virtually. His name is Ed Dowd. He is a very skilled and accomplished practitioner in the black arts of the financial sector, notably with one of the blackest of them all, as far as I'm concerned, BlackRock. He has come out recently with some very, very troubling findings about the nature of the vaccines and the damage that they're doing to us in the name of preventing this affliction, COVID-19, from being a health crisis for us all. We're going to talk to him a bit about both what he has found to date and what we should be doing with the evidence he's accumulated. Ed Dowd, welcome to Securing America. It's great to have you with us, sir. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you came to your present work.
Yeah, so real briefly, I've been in the financial markets my whole career. I spent 5 years at HSBC, where I was in the fixed income credit markets. And then I transitioned into the equity side of the capital markets and worked at Donaldson, Lufkin and Jenrette, which was a renowned equity research shop. And then I eventually found my way to BlackRock as a portfolio manager, managing a large cap growth fund for 10 years, where we took the business from $2 billion to $14 billion over those 10 years. So I have a lot of experience. Most importantly, in my career, I saw three frauds. I saw the dot-com fraud, I saw the great financial crisis fraud, and I'm currently working on the pharmaceutical vaccine fraud.
Let's talk a little bit about what you have found in the way of the last of those frauds. It is clear that there have been problems with the vaccines that have been concealed from the rest of us. Is that the crux of it? And what have you found in that regard?
Well, so this is a fraud in process. And, you know, it's been amazing since my media profile has risen how much has changed in just a few short 8 weeks. So we now know that the media, the mainstream media, was given money by the Biden administration to essentially push the vaccines and, more importantly, not book anybody that had a counter narrative to the vaccine. So that's number one. Before, I'd only been thinking that they were doing that out of greed because they were getting lots of advertising dollars from Pfizer and other companies. Well, you can combine both now. That's number one. Number two, I accused Pfizer publicly on Twitter of committing fraud. I can say that because I'm an investor. It was my investment thesis. What I saw was that they hid the all-cause mortality endpoint from us when they announced their vaccines in November of 2020. That data came out in November of 2021 through a FOIA request. And what that means is the drug should not have been approved from the get-go by the FDA. Then the FDA comes out and hides the data for 75 years, okay? That was prima facie evidence for me as an investor that something terrible had happened at the FDA and that they were involved in a cover-up and also fraud. So once my media profile rose, I said publicly on Steve Bannon's show, I want to be a lightning rod. Brooke Jackson, the whistleblower, came to my attention. She reached out to me because I had used the word fraud, and I spoke to her for 3 hours, and we started doing a couple podcasts together, and she's now off and running, doing her own thing again. Her story was kind of dismissed after she came public in November with the BMJ. So she basically, as far as I'm concerned, in her 1,000 patients that she was responsible for, they unblinded the data. That data was rolled up in the full trial, and her 1,000 patients could have affected the math alone. In the final trial studies, there were 8 vaccinated in the vaccine group that got COVID and 164 in the placebo group who got COVID. So that's how they came up with 95% efficacy. Because it was unblinded, the doctors knew that the people they were testing for COVID had the vaccine or not. So they could have said, well, you're not feeling well, but I know you have the vaccine, so I'm not going to test you for COVID. So all you have to do is move 75 of her 1,000 over to the vaccinated column. That's 50% efficacy. All 164, which is possible, moves over to that column. It's 0% efficacy. And if you think that her site was the only site where fraud occurred, it's a smoking gun.
Yeah, clearly. So, Ed, let me just ask you, when you're talking about the problems in this category, it doesn't actually live up, these vaccines, Pfizer specifically, to its billing. But that's only part of the story, of course. The other part is the damage that has been done as well. Talk about your research in that regard.
Yeah, so fraud occurred in the clinical trials, and if that's proven, which I think it will be, it vitiates all contracts, so all their immunity goes away. Now, let's roll forward a year and a few months.
Let's just dwell on that for 1 second. The vaccines are covered by a blanket immunity for the companies involved against lawsuits. Robert Kennedy has expressed a high dudgeon about that arrangement in his book about Tony Fauci, of course. But the magnitude of that particular problem is dwarfed, it seems to me, by the extent to which we've seen, serious fraud with respect to the real vulnerabilities of people as a result of these vaccines. What has been done to them? So get into that, if you would.
So let's talk about that. So basically, roll forward, 14, 15 months since they launched this thing, the fruits of the fraud are now undeniable. And my entrance onto the scene was because I started to talk about the insurance company results, the funeral home results. Then we stumbled upon my insurance industry partner who reached out to me as well to help me with this analysis. He was a former number one ranked institutional investor, Wall Street analyst. He has actuarial training. We went into the CDC data recently, the last several weeks, and we showed that the millennials, which in our opinion are the smoking gun, have had a continued rise in excess mortality since 2020. So they're hitting new highs when they shouldn't be. They're not an age they should be getting COVID. And we saw a huge spike into the fall mandates. Okay. And it was look, we're math guys. And we noticed the slope of the line went straight up. That's a rate of change. And in our opinion, the only thing that can be explained by that is the mandates.
Okay, hold that thought, Ed. We're going to come right back to more about the mandates and about the insights from the insurance companies, and most especially what we have to be doing with this evidence that you've accumulated. Ed Dowd is our guest. We're going to talk about all of that and more on the other side of this very short message. Stay tuned.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Once again, we are talking with Ed Dowd, a former financial markets maven who has turned his experience inside the industry into one of the most important forensic exercises, I would argue, done to date about the nature of the fraud, a term he's now used repeatedly, that has arisen as a result of this whole COVID-19 vaccination exercise. The vaccines themselves, the mandates of their use, and the cover-ups associated with both. So, Ed, you were talking about insights from outfits like the insurance industry and even undertakers. Just drill down a little bit on why that evidence is so important and has told you things that you weren't getting from official sources, that's for sure.
Right. So we knew something was going on. We were all very suspicious. We all had heard the frontline doctors. We had all heard the anecdotes. The data in VAERS was being poo-pooed. But we knew that if this was as bad as we thought it was, it would begin to show up in public company results, which you can't hide. It's a different database. And the insurance companies in the second half of 2021 experienced an alarming increase in death benefit payouts across the board. A bunch of them noticed in the fourth quarter and third quarter that younger people were dying at a faster rate than older people. And interestingly enough, funeral home companies started to see an acceleration in their stock prices and their results into the second half of 2021. They essentially became growth stocks. Funeral homes should not be growth stocks. They were up. One was up 106% for the year. Another one was up 65% for the year.
So what does that mean, Ed? Does that mean that there's insider trading going on? People seeing the mortality rates skyrocketing and that there's going to be a killing, if I can use that expression, to be made?
No, I don't think there's any insider trading. I think what it was is, you know, people that followed that industry started to hear, you know, investors call companies, do, you know, go to conferences, and they heard business was good. They didn't know why, but that, you know, the market is smarter than us usually and discounts forward. So the market figured out before many of us that business was going to be great at the funeral home companies. And unfortunately, it has been. In a pandemic response with miracle vaccines, we should not be seeing funeral home companies and insurance company results like this with miracle vaccines. So, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say maybe the vaccines are the problem. That's my thesis, and that's what we're saying.
So with that thesis, based on this collection of sources of data, what is your recommendation, Ed Dowd, about what we should be doing, for starters, with respect to the mandates, but beyond that, with respect to these drugs and the companies responsible for them in the second instance?
Well, let's just frame this for a second. You know, why did it take myself, a person who's no longer on Wall Street, living in the middle of Pacific Ocean on the side of a dormant volcano, and another ex-Wall Street guy to figure this out? So our institutions, the early warning watchdogs, have failed us. And now we've discovered this. We're trying to get on mainstream media. They don't seem to have any interest in talking to us. So we need to talk to politicians. So we've discovered something that needs to be discussed nationally. I would be more than happy to take the data my partner and I have found and go up on the Hill and testify. We have no problem defending our data. So this needs to be elevated, and then other people need to step in, and then my 15 minutes of fame can end. I mean, if you think about this, it's ridiculous that I have to be here. That's where we are as a country.
What level of interest has been expressed? You've indicated not any from the mainstream media, so-called, but what about the politicians on Capitol Hill and elsewhere?
None.
Zero?
Zero. But, you know, I will tell you, we're working on something outside of the political realm. We're working on, stay tuned, the information we found will be shared with the insurance industry, because ultimately they will be the bag holders. They have a financial interest here. And we're going to make sure that they're aware of this, and they may have to come out publicly and say, hey, let's end these mandates. Let's end the vaccine program. So we're trying to do what we can to stop this.
Well, I presume that at a minimum, they will be pushing for an end to the immunities so that the people responsible can be sued by them and others, tort lawyers, you know, victims and so on, don't you expect? And where's the FDA? Where's the Center for Disease Control in all of this? Have you exposed them to this data? They expressed any more interest than the politicians or the media?
No. So, you know, look, the FDA has gotten 50% of its budget from the pharmaceutical industry for years. We suspect they were politically pressured and/or some certain key of people were looking for revolving door jobs after this and pushed it through. And so there's corruption at the third party trusted institution, which is the FDA. This is just like the great financial crisis, where the rating agencies were corrupted and put you know, stamps on AAA bonds that weren't AAA. So this is how this fraud was perpetuated. Yet all the doctors across America trust the FDA. And that's why so many doctors just pushed this thing thinking it was safe.
Well, and there are penalties associated with not trusting those doctors or the FDA. You know, regulatory capture, Ed, as you know, is the Washington term for this kind of corruption. But at the end of the day, it really does come down to, it seems to me, a betrayal of the public trust on an epic scale. And to the extent that that has happened, there has to be accountability. And if it's not going to come, you know, from congressional overseers, if it's not going to come from the watchdogs in the media, and certainly not from the government in the executive branch, it's going to have to come from people like yourself. And I guess those tort lawyers bringing, you know, very expensive cases against the companies and maybe even some of these individuals in government who are complicit in this fraud and all that has flowed from it, including immense damage, not just economic, but to the people of this country and countless others besides. Ed Dowd, let me simply say thank you for what you have done here, for stepping into the breach when it clearly needed to be addressed, and bringing your formidable skills to bear to expose the rest of us to the truth. Godspeed. I hope you'll come back to us with updates in the days to come. Thanks to the rest of you for joining us for this edition of Securing America. I hope you feel better equipped to do just that, and that you'll rejoin us and also check out our website, securingamerica.tv. And then go forth and multiply.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.